Thanks, Des, for that introduction. You're quite right. The technology, I do have quite an obsession or a passion for the technology since I've discovered it. And by the way, I still work as an engineer full-time. That's how I pay my bills. And when I don't work as an engineer, I teach other people about blockchain and I study the technology. And that is truly the highlight of my diary every time I have the opportunity to do that. So thanks to Waxman also for the opportunity to speak to you today about it. So being an engineer, I understand the technology from a very technical point of view. And I also explain it from a technical point of view. And, you know, last year it was still easy to explain blockchain technology because no one knew anything. So I could have kept it quite high level. This year it's begun to be more of a challenge because you get people that actually know something about blockchain in the audience, and you don't want to bore them, and you get people that doesn't know anything, so you need to keep everyone interested. So you will see today that I will fly over the basics quite quickly, so if you don't know anything about blockchain, you must concentrate very hard in the beginning, and then I will dive right into the rabbit hole and get quite technical again. I'll leave the maths out of it, so if you see me start talking about math, just show me that you're bored, and then I'll carry on, because I can get quite carried away when I start speaking about math. Okay, so just as a matter of interest, and also so that I can know who I'm speaking to, can I just ask you guys three questions? So first of all, by a show of hands, who of you have ever owned cryptocurrency or currently owns cryptocurrency, whether it's Bitcoin, Ether? Okay, that's cool, about half the audience. And then who of you think that crypto assets are in a bubble? All right. Also about the same people, more or less the same people. And then, which is strange. And then, and then third of all, the third question, who of you think that blockchain is the future of the way we're going to do business? More or less everyone. That's great to see. Okay. Now I know who I'm speaking to. So let's start it off. So first of all, just going to quickly brush over this word Bitcoin. I know it's a swear word. I won't mention it too much, but it's very difficult to explain what a blockchain is without mentioning Bitcoin. I thought it is. Actually, on Tuesday, I went to the South African Reserve Bank's launch of Project Coca, which is a blockchain initiative. It's an excellent project. And I really encourage you to go read up about it. The South African Reserve Bank is doing amazing things with blockchain. And they mentioned, the governor and a few other people spoke at that event for more than 2 hours without mentioning the word Bitcoin. I didn't think it's possible. So this was the first time ever I've seen that. So I'm not at that level yet. So what is Bitcoin? Well, Bitcoin was created in 2009 by Satoshi Nakamoto. We don't know who Satoshi Nakamoto is, whether it's a man, a woman, or a group of people. And it was a combination of many technologies which existed at the time in order to create Bitcoin. And what Bitcoin did, or what the combination of this technology did, was that it allowed us to solve what we call the Byzantine Generals problem. Now, without going into the math and the technicalities of what exactly that is, by solving the Byzantine Generals problem, it basically allows us to make digital data scarce. That is a summary of what the technology does for us. So you combine blockchain technology, proof of work, and a consensus algorithm. That might sound like Greek, but I'm going to explain all of those technologies to you in a moment. So if you combine all of those technologies, you solve the Byzantine Generals problem and you make digital data scarce. So what that means is, let's say I attach some sort of intrinsic value to a piece of digital data. Let's say I take a picture of my dog and I send that picture to someone else, which I owe money to. And I say it because that's a good picture of the dog. It's a nice and healthy dog. You cannot do that. The reason you cannot do that is because you still own a copy of that picture. So it's not scarce. You can make 1,000 copies of it, so it has no inherent data value. Digital data is valueless in its core. So By solving the business in general's problem, now it allows us to make digital data scarce. So if I take a picture of my dog, I can send it to someone else, and I am not the owner of that picture anymore. I can try to make copies of it and claim ownership, but it won't work. You cannot do that. The new owner of that picture now is the person whom I sent it to. So by doing that, you can make digital data valuable. And there will never be a dispute on who the owner is of that piece of digital data. So now you have scarce digital data for the first time ever since 2009. And now you can write software programs to give a monetary policy to that digital data, and you can call it money. Because as we all know, money has certain characteristics. It needs to be divisible, fungible, medium of exchange, a store of value, a few other things. And you need a community to accept it. So if you have a community that accepts cryptocurrency or that piece of digital data which you programmed as being valuable, then you have money. In fact, you have exceptionally good money, because we all know that fiat money, as we know it, we realized that it's actually a terrible store of value the day that we lost our finance minister, the day it was fired. So we lost 20% of our wealth overnight. So fiat money is actually a terrible store of value. Also, if you ask people from Greece or Zimbabwe or Venezuela, they'll all tell you that fiat money is a bad store of value. So now what we can do is we can write a program, we can write a monetary policy to this program, and we can make it money, and we can make it an exceptionally good store of value, but a terrible medium of exchange. So the assumption that we have as humans, that money has to adhere to all of those characteristics that I mentioned for it to be called money, that assumption is challenged, because now we can write money that is exceptionally good at one of those characteristics, but bad at the others, or also more or less good at all of them. Okay, so that was Bitcoin very briefly. So, okay, no, I'm not done with Bitcoin. So what is Bitcoin then? Well, Bitcoin is a distributed ledger. So what does that mean? Well, think about it this way. When we used to transact digitally, when we transact digitally today, let's say I have a Pick and Pay, and someone comes to my Pick and Pay and he wants to buy bread from me. Okay, he swipes his credit card at my payment machine, point of sale, and that bread is 20 Rand, so 20 Rand is supposed to be deducted from his account and added to my account. But how do I know that that actually happens? How do I know that that person who buys the bread from me doesn't have a hacked card and he makes my machine seem to have deducted 20 Rand from his account, but it was only 5 Rand? And how does he know that I haven't hacked my machine and made it look like I only deducted 20 Rand, but actually I took 50 Rand? Well, we need to trust each other in order to transact digitally. And we all know as humans we can't trust each other, so we solve that problem through a bank. And the bank keeps a ledger, and the bank will deduct 20 Rand from his account and debit credit my account with 20 Rand when we transact digitally. Now, the bank knows our identities, so if the one tries to cheat the other, the bank will intervene. So the bank is ultimately a ledger keeper. It's important to note. Okay, so within Bitcoin or cryptocurrency, this bank, this ledger keeper, is replaced by a computer, or actually many computers. So the computers verify the transaction, and they keep a ledger, and they add these transactions to this ledger every time that they happen. So, and they basically act as nodes. We call these computer nodes. And you have thousands of computers all updating one single ledger. There's only one ledger, there's only one copy of the ledger. There's many copies of the ledger, but there's only one version of the ledger, and everyone accepts that version of the ledger to be true. Okay, so then, but that wouldn't work. If you think about it, there's still someone writing code for that computer, writing a software program for that computer, so that person that writes it still has the ability to cheat the system by writing malware for the computer. So how do you solve that problem? You add proof of work. What proof of work means is that you are allowed to to contribute to this network and hold a copy of the ledger and add transactions to the ledger, but you must pay for it. It's not free. In fact, it's very expensive. You pay for it by means of electricity, first of all. And second of all, if you play according to the rules and you don't try to cheat the system, you get rewarded. And you get rewarded most of the times more than what you are paying towards electricity. So your reward's more than your investment. And by doing that, you keep out the bad guys. Because if someone tries to come and cheat the ledger and create additional currency or increase his own balance, then he will not only lose out on the electricity that he spent, because, by the way, he will fail. It's practically impossible to attack the Bitcoin system or the blockchain system in that case. And I don't have time to go into the technicalities of how that can be done or where the risk in that lies today, but it's impossible. So you will not succeed, then you will lose out on your investment that you made in order to try to do that, and you will lose out on the reward that you would have gained if you just used all your resources to play according to the rules. All right, so that's basically how you keep everyone honest, and that is called the consensus algorithm. The consensus protocol means that all of these nodes, all of the computers that are working together to update the ledger, they are all in consensus about what the correct version of the ledger is, and that is the ultimate truth. Whatever is written in the ledger cannot be changed. It is immutable, so, and it is there's no dispute that it is the ultimate truth. All right, and okay, one more difference or between a bank and a cryptocurrency blockchain is that the blockchain is borderless and it's permissionless. It does not distinguish between you sending a piece of this digital data, which is now scarce and valuable, to your neighbor or to the other side of the globe. It doesn't know, it doesn't distinguish between that. And it all happens instantly at virtually no cost. I'll come back to that. And we know that banks do not operate like that. Okay. So this is basically the blockchain. The blockchain is this ledger. It's this ledger broken down into hundreds and thousands of blocks, each block containing more or less 2,000 transactions, and it gets updated every 10 minutes with a new block. Now, the only important thing to note here is that each and every block is mathematically connected to the block behind it and the block in front of it. So if you go back and 100 blocks and you try to change the transaction there, you change the entire structure of the blockchain. Your blockchain will not even look similar to the correct version of the blockchain. It will look entirely different. So it's very, very easy to spot a tampered blockchain because they're all mathematically connected to each other. That's basically the most important thing there. Okay, but there's one more part to all of this. And that is you need to be able to prove that you are the owner of this digital data. So we now know that the blockchain, proof of work, and a consensus protocol, those three technologies work together to allow us to make a piece of digital data scarce. And you must be able to prove that you are the owner, and that you do through cryptography, which is a mathematical science on its own. But basically what it means is that it is undisputed about who the owner of that digital data is. And you prove that you are the owner of that digital data by providing your private key. Now, a private key can take many different forms. Most of them are 32-byte number. Now, what that means is, don't worry about that. What that means is you can derive a private key from any piece or from any input that you want. So you can take a fingerprint and you can send your fingerprint through a mathematical algorithm and get a private key. So you can basically prove that you are the owner of a certain piece of data by providing a fingerprint, or your DNA, or an iris from your eye, or anything. You can take 12 words and you can derive a private key from that. Light, couch, chair, 12, any unique 12 words, and you just mix them around and do a few operations with them and you have a private key. So a private key can be anything. So you can actually have a private key in your brain. You don't need to write it down. You just remember 12 words, and then if you can say those 12 words or give those 12 words to the blockchain, then it can confirm that you are in fact the owner of a certain piece of digital data. All right, so what does all this mean? What can the blockchain then do for us and for you as the entrepreneur, the business executive? And this is where I want to spend most of my time for this presentation. So, now, we know that you have a piece of digital data which is scarce, cannot be copied. There's no dispute about who the owner is because you are the only person that holds the private key. Let's say it's your fingerprint. There's no one else that has the same fingerprint of you than you. So, now, this piece of digital data, what is it? And this is the point where I want to make you go, aha, now I understand it. So this piece of digital data, you know, what is it? It can be the title deed to a house or to a property. It can be the chassis number, description, and the odometer of a car. It can be a medical record. It can be a share certificate. It can be a unit of electricity. It can be the rights to a vote. It can basically be anything that you can describe in a digital manner, which means anything on the entire planet, because there's nothing on this planet that you cannot describe digitally. This digitally scarce data. I read last week, I don't know how accurate that is, but I read that there's $700 trillion worth of tangible assets in the world. And I believe that in less than two decades from now, a piece of digitally scarce data will be assigned to every single asset in the world, and an owner will be attached or assigned to that asset. And we in the crypto community, or the blockchain community, we call that tokenization of assets. All right? So let me give you an example if you still struggle to understand this. Let's say you have a piece of digitally scarce data that describes the rights to a vote. Then you as a director of a company can be the owner of that piece of digital data, and you can prove undisputed that you are the owner by providing a fingerprint. And then you can cast your vote within your company. And, you know, a vote is not always a vote. So sometimes for certain decisions in a company, you want a unanimous vote. And for other decisions, you just want a majority vote. And some companies can be quite complex. In December, your company might have a different voting structure than in July because most of the directors might be on leave or whatever. So all of these things you can program into a piece of software that governs the way that the voting happens. And that is called a smart contract. That is what a smart contract does. It manages decisions that is made on the blockchain. Okay, and you can make it as simple or as complex as you want. The most simplest form of a smart contract is probably a debit order, which is that, you know, at a certain date, a certain amount of money must be deducted from your account. And then you can make it extremely complicated and even program games. There's even people who created games on the blockchain. Okay. So, now, how do you actually use this in your business? Well, first of all, you can build all of this functionality. You can build smart contracts on the Bitcoin blockchain. But there's a few issues with it. The biggest issue of it all is that the Bitcoin blockchain is very limited script capabilities, which means that you cannot really program complex software on the Bitcoin blockchain. It doesn't allow for that. The Ethereum blockchain fixes that. The Ethereum blockchain, you can program the most complex software that you can possibly think of on that blockchain, and it will be able to execute it. But there's still a problem with the Ethereum blockchain, and that is that it's completely open. Everyone will be able to see what you are doing on the blockchain. It's also permissionless, just like Bitcoin. So it means anyone is able to go and set up an Ethereum mining rig and start validating the transactions. Anyone can go and view the blockchain and see exactly what you wrote in your software and analyze your code. So that's definitely not ideal. So what did you as a business owner then do? Well, you would employ a private blockchain, which works on the same way as the Ethereum or the Bitcoin blockchain, but it is within contained within a certain community. And I'm going to show you exactly what that means and how that works. Okay, so if you use a private blockchain, it works more or less like a database. Okay, and I'm going to show you one use case which you can use that for, or a couple of use cases. So it works like a database, but it is also decentralized, like the Ethereum or the Bitcoin blockchain. And many parties can write to the same database. That's the magic of it, okay? Is that it acts like a database, but a single source of database, which is the ultimate truth, and everyone accepts it to be the truth. So you can have multiple parties writing to the same database, and you can give them permissions to write certain things, and you can give other parties permission to only read certain things on this database, and some of them to read and write. Okay, if that sounds complicated, let me use an example. Let's say you have an exporting business. I'm not a supply chain expert, but I can just imagine that if you export, let's say you export grapes from South Africa to Europe, there's a lot of parties involved in such a process. First of all, it's the seller, which is maybe the farmer. Then you have the whole transporting and logistical aspect of it. So you first have land transport to the harbor, then sea transport to Europe, and then land transport again. So you have multiple transporting companies involved in this process. Secondly, you have the your customs department, which needs to check the values of it, and you have, let's say you have your regulators, and you probably you have somewhere someone that does quality assurance. You have the tax man. All of them have an interest in this exporting process where you export grapes from South Africa to Europe. And they all have a common interest, some of them. So the tax man wants to know the values. He wants to know how much are you exporting. And the quality assurance person wants to know, you know, what the temperature were for the entire journey, from the moment it left the farm to the moment it lands on the shelves in Europe. It wants to know that the temperature hasn't risen above a certain degree Celsius. Then you have people recording information to their own databases in this case. The transporting company will record information. The customs department will record information. And then you have people that need those information. And many times there's disputes. Let's say, for instance, you ship ₹1,000 worth of grapes here from South Africa, but the time it arrives in Europe, it's suddenly ₹1,500 worth of grapes that enters Europe. Now there's a dispute, and your authorities want to know both those values, and if there's a dispute, then the courts need to be involved in order to rectify that. So a private permissioned blockchain would work perfectly in such a situation. Because with a private permissioned blockchain, you can allow everyone to write to the same database and record information on there. And there's no dispute as to whether that information is true, because everyone verifies that information as well. So and even competitors can write to the same database, and you cannot go and fiddle around with your competitor's data, because the consensus algorithm keeps everyone in consensus that whatever is written on there is the truth, and if you go try to change something, then you are kicked out or you are punished in some way. Like on the Bitcoin blockchain, you lose out on your investments and you lose out on the reward. Now, there's many different standardized consensus algorithms out there, all very mathematical and very technical, but they work. They keep everyone in consensus, which basically means they agree that whatever is written on this blockchain is the truth. Okay, so that is basically how you do it. And then you give certain rights to the taxman to read from the database and to the regulators to read from the database. And it's one centralized database. No one owns it. There's no administrator to this database. Everyone just adds information to it and you give permissions to some people to read from it. This is exactly what the South African Reserve Bank did with their Project COCA. Is they allowed all of the banks, six banks, Capitec, Absa, Investec, Discovery, Nedbank, all of the big ones, to write to the same database and keep a ledger of their different balances. And in that way, they managed to settle transactions within seconds, interbank transactions for the first time ever. Okay, so that's basically how it works on a very high level. It might still sound complicated, but yeah, that is it. So actually the other day, I just want to say this as well, the other day I went to hospital for a small procedure on my finger, actually, which I hurt. And I immediately realized that I had to fill in the same questions or the same forms 5 times or even more. It was extremely frustrating. One for the anesthesiologist, one for the doctor, one for the hospital, one for the medical aid. I have to give them all my medical history, which is the same questions, more or less, and the same answers, and the same signature. So a private permission blockchain would have worked in that case as well, because you only give the patient the chance to fill in the questions once, and you give certain parties the authority to read from the block or from that database, but only what they need to read from it. And even though they might be competitors in this whole process, they cannot go and change the data or try and influence their competitor to read something else than what they are supposed to read, and so on. Okay, so these pictures are just showing you that this is the problem. Everyone keeps their own databases, and sometimes you need information from the one database and from the other, and then there's differences and it creates issues, and the blockchain allows everyone to write on the same database. Okay, so I'm going to skip a few slides because I think we're running out of time. So I'm not going to speak too much about regulation today. I think we'll speak about it a lot later. Just quickly, if you are interested in employing such a blockchain in your business, these are typically the technologies that you will use. Your Hyperledger is quite big. The South African Reserve Bank use Quorum, which is a permissioned private fork from Ethereum blockchain, and so on. And these are just more examples of how it is already used out there in the world today. So I just want to quickly spend 30 seconds on this slide in that. Okay, so now you know more or less what the blockchain is and what it can do from a very high level, and spoke about it quite fast, so didn't have too much time to go into it, but you have an idea. So what's next? What do you do next? Well, first of all, I will encourage you to attend one of our courses. We at the Blockchain Academy have a legal and regulatory course on the 19th of June here in AlphaCode in Sandton, which is next to RMB. Please inquire about that if you're interested in the whole regulatory environment that surrounds this. It's a full-day course. We go into it quite deep. And then I present all of the technical stuff. There's the Blockchain Beginners course, Blockchain Advanced course, there's a Blockchain for Executives course, we have a Blockchain Bootcamp, which is quite interesting. It shows you as a business executive the steps that you need to take in order to implement a blockchain in your business, and we help you to develop a use case. So there's a lot of standardized courses, and if we don't have something for you, then just contact me and we'll sit together and we'll construct something. We've done that plenty of times as well. If you tell me you have 2 hours and you want to train your accountants on what the blockchain will do to their industry, or how to prepare your career for such disruption, then we sit and we develop something like that, for instance, or within financial institutions or so on. So that's the first thing you need to do. The second thing is you construct a use case. You need to define where you will be using blockchain in your business, should you want to. And then you decide on a platform. If you want to build it on Ethereum blockchain, you're welcome. It's not very difficult, and it's already there. Everything, you don't need nodes, you don't need computers, nothing. But obviously there's risks towards it. And then you contract experts, where we as the academy can also help you with that and send you in the right direction to build it. And then you build it, and you can employ your blockchain within your business. So, yes, that is it from my side. I didn't really check the time, but I think I'm more or less where I should be.